And we're live. We're back here at Channel 9 Live at Microsoft Ignite. We're doing an alternate format.
Alternate format.
We're trying this out.
A something growth mindset. New.
So to be able to entice a larger audience to ask you questions, we're doing this inside of an actual scheduled breakout room.
That's right.
And taking the feed and putting it as if it were coming from the Channel 9 Live stage.
And these are all hired actors here.
Yes.
They are conference actors.
They're conference actors.
We've actually got thousands of them.
Yes.
They all came to my session too. It's nice.
You got it. I'm trying to make it look good for you.
That's right.
So
even with actors, no one laughed at my jokes in my session too. So I don't know. That's
nice.
Unfortunate.
So I'm Rick Claus. I'm your host, but actually the star of the episode we're doing today for Azure TWC, because it is Tuesdays.
It is Tuesday.
And it is Corey.
Hi.
Corey Sanders, Corporate Vice President of Azure.
Yes.
Round of applause. Wow. Here we go. Got some audience.
Hey.
Got him.
That round of applause, clearly it was already worth it, the paid actors.
So. And so for those that are online and that are also in the room you'll be able to come down and use one of the microphones to ask a question in just about 5 or so minutes. But if you're online, you can obviously go through, and if you're on the Channel 9 Live page, you can actually have a little form and then put in the question on there. If you're simply listening to this as part of the live experience of streaming sessions all throughout Microsoft Ignite from the techcommunities.microsoft.com website, you can just simply use Twitter and use the hashtag AzureTWC. I've got it up here on my phone to be able to take
You're
a couple of questions.
Roll.
I'm ready to roll. But I wanted to give you an opportunity, man. You had a keynote yesterday.
Right. I talked for 75
session.
Minutes. You should let me talk some more. Absolutely.
And I wanted to give you time to basically say, hey, what was some cool stuff that you talked about that you want to bring
totally.
To the attention of the audience
yeah,
and
yeah.
kind of set the stage a little
okay.
bit, man?
Absolutely. So why don't I start there? So let me just ask in the room, and then I'm going to lie when they ask me online. How many people saw my session yesterday, just so I understand sort of a breakdown? So it looks like about a 100% raiser. No, about 50% raise their hand. Okay, so you know, in the session yesterday, I covered a lot of stuff, right? And it was pretty exciting, a lot of new stuff. But it kind of broke down into 3 or 4 big categories. One being infrastructure for every workload. One of the biggest things we're really focusing on the infrastructure side, whether it be compute, storage, networking, is to make sure every workload that you have is going to be enabled as you move. We're seeing more and more of this sort of massive migration, whether it's starting from just the first workload or the final workload, and making sure that sort of all of you can understand that you know our plans are to be able to support everything in Azure. And so that's kind of a bold statement, but that's the goal. And so that's with the broad range of VM sizes, the new disk support to offer much faster disks with Ultra SSDs. They all kind of fit into that category, sort of the new networking support as well. So that's a big one. Hybrid is another really big one. Hybrid by default or hybrid by design. Not by default. You have to select it. But it is by design. Offering sort of hybrid capabilities and just a lot of offerings from the edge all the way, including Azure Stack and some of the IoT-based solutions there. I think that's going to be some pretty cool opportunities. So we talked a lot about that. Then management, security, and trust is another really big area and also something I think we do pretty unique in Azure. And we showed actually one of my favorite features in the stack, which is Blueprints. So that allows you to sort of create a subscription and then immediately configure it in every way you need to, whether it be policy, roles, and so on. It creates resource groups for you. And so it should allow sort of the expanding on Azure to be much easier than it's been in the past. In the past, it's very manual and cumbersome to do that. So that's pretty exciting. And then cost. Overall focus on cost. We talked a little bit about just Azure Hybrid Use benefits and the migration of 2008 and 2008 R2. So that's kind of in a nutshell the things we talked about, obviously with lots of demos. We talked about a lot of new sizes, not a lot of new VM sizes, including a new deep learning size, which is pretty cool, with 8 NVIDIA GPUs, NVLinked together, so they can all kind of work together in conjunction. So those are kind of some of the biggest things.
And obviously you can catch that on replay again if you want to.
You
be
can.
Able to see all the demos. And
That's
see
your
all
way
goodness.
Of telling me to shut up.
No,
That's,
no.
They can go watch it.
It's the complimentary additional resource after the session is
That's
done.
That's right.
They
there
go
you
off
go.
And see
I like
it, right?
That. I like that.
We do have a first question that came in. This one is from Evil Snowboo. You got to love these names. Hopefully they're going to be work safe. We'll figure out what they are. You talked about the NVIDIA.
Yes.
Right? NVIDIA, the new vGPU V2. He's going to be very blunt and simply say, when? Are you able to say what timeline they're going to be?
NDV2,
yeah.
That specific SKU.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, I have to go back and look. It was
approximate time.
So one of the things for almost all of our announcements, we don't like to make announcements that actually span the calendar year,
right?
Unless we explicitly say sometime next year. So I have to go back and look at the NDV2. But my if memory serves, it was going to be later this year.
Okay.
But I'd have to go back and take a look at that specifically. We can post that later. So if you remember, for a lot of the announcements, they were either available today. There were some that were in the coming weeks, which were basically, we were trying to get it done today, but we slightly missed. And so there's 10 things coming out the first week of October. So, and then there was a few that were basically by the end of the year, and those were things that just we've been working on, but aren't quite ready. So, that's for almost all of the announcements I think I made fit into that category. So.
We have another one that was online here as well, specifically asking for some more details around what brought about the creation of the instantaneous capabilities of ACI, Azure Compute Instances, otherwise known as Virtual Node.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about the background of that, how it came about.
I'd love to. Yeah, that's a fun one. And then I guess if there's questions that people have in the audience, you can queue behind the microphone if you want. We'll call on you as well. We demoed that as well. I should have mentioned that. So a new capability. So something that we've seen a lot of growth, obviously, in Azure is containers and Azure Kubernetes Service. It's in fact, it's actually one of the fastest growing services we've ever seen on the platform, growing faster than we expected, frankly. We've actually started putting a whole lot more people on it because it's growing so fast, because we just realized how exciting sort of that opportunity is to deploy. And what this really is I think obviously this container movement has really sort of taken the entire IT world by storm, which is great, right? It adds this level of agility, it adds this level of efficiency, and it adds sort of this rapid scale opportunity, right? And I actually think some of the biggest benefit, the efficiency is good, but the agility is probably the biggest benefit. The ability to take your workload and sort of package it up and have that sort of consistent way that it deploys anywhere in sort of that exact same way, I think that is really what's driving the container movement. With Kubernetes, adding an orchestrator on top, because once you're focused on, great, now I can package my workload, now how is it going to get deployed? How can I make sure that it's efficiently deployed? And more importantly, how is it auto-healing, right? If something goes wrong, is it going to redeploy somewhere else? So on and so forth, what are the rules? And Kubernetes has really picked up a lot of energy. A big part of it is because it was so open source from the beginning, sort of a community-led project. Obviously, Google created it, but then released it to the community, and the community has really been strong. And we've been a very active part of that community, actually, from almost the beginning, both Docker and Kubernetes community. And so that's been really exciting. And really, in the end, when you think of Kubernetes in sort of simple terms, its job is really just around placement, and it's sort of a set of APIs that, because it is open source and portable, right, you can build your management capabilities to sit on top of Kubernetes, and you can have that level of comfort that, great, it's going to work awesome on our managed Kubernetes service, but if you're also running somewhere else, you should come and talk to me, and I'll convince you otherwise. No, if you're also running somewhere else, because there's most people are going to be multi-cloud, it's a sort of a reality that we're expecting and believe in, then being able to write those management capabilities on top of Kubernetes and know that they will work on other managed services and other clouds is actually really, really compelling. And so this is a big reason why Kubernetes picked up, and this is a big reason why we are investing so heavily, because I actually believe very deeply in this being a really powerful way to go innovate your workloads without having any concept of lock-in anywhere. So that's super cool. But what we've done with that is sort of tried to add, one of the things or the focal points that we have when it comes to open source is certainly we want open source to be portable, to give you that ability to sort of move, but we also want to make sure that our platform's so good that you don't want to move, right? That's kind of my job, is to make sure that you love it so much that you really don't want to go anywhere else, but you could, right? It's sort of the way we think about, at least the way I think about open source. And so when we were thinking about, how to make containers better, one of the things that we sort of realized about, 9, 12 months ago, I can't remember when sort of the first idea came up, and Brendan Burns and I and Gabe were sort of, and Mon, a few of us on the team, were all talking, and we're sort of like, gosh, containers are awesome, but wouldn't it be great if you didn't even have VMs underneath to worry about, right? If people just came with containers and said, I want to deploy this container. It sort of seemed, and when we sort of all thought about it, we're like, well, gosh, no one's doing that, but it's such an obvious next step. And so we spec'd it out and we worked on it. And there was a lot of internal conflict. It's one of these interesting things with Microsoft. There was a lot of debate over how will people use it, right? It's just a container, but it's not an orchestrator. Are you creating a new orchestrator? Like, are you going to actually compete with Kubernetes? No, we don't want to compete with Kubernetes. Q&A. So it ended up being kind of a lot of interesting conversation. And as we progressed with it, we said, wait a second. If we put those new serverless containers underneath Kubernetes, people still have this portability. They can still write their management layers on top to Kubernetes, right? They're still portable. You can go anywhere you want. But on Azure, it works a little bit better, right? And so with this virtual node concept, now you don't have to wait for VMs to spin up to scale out your Kubernetes cluster. You can put it on top of our serverless containers, and it's going to scale instantaneously underneath. But again, it's not a hard dependency that you've taken on our cloud. It just hopefully makes it easier and better to run on top of Azure with Kubernetes. And so that's really sort of the principle behind virtual node. And so we demoed it in my session.
Right.
And it's actually, I think it's really exciting. If you want to learn more, I think that there's a way to sign up for that preview for virtual node. You can probably see them at the booth. And then my mechanic show, I'm actually going to show a little bit of it too.
Yeah, actually, I saw Rhea downstairs.
Yeah.
She tweeted this morning at 4 a.m. She just let a bunch of people into the private preview.
Yeah. So it's really exciting. So if you're a Kubernetes expert or just learning about Kubernetes, both, right, both categories are great. And definitely play with virtual node, because it is, at this point, you click a little button in the portal. There's no setup, right? You don't really need to understand what's happening underneath. You just need to know that those VMs don't need to be created for scale to happen automatically. It's just spinning up containers in the back end fully serverless. So that's really exciting. Sorry. You probably want a much shorter answer.
No. This is your corporate VP training that kicks in to take longer answers. But we actually have a first one in the room. A very daring gentleman's up to the microphone there.
Hi. Do you breathe sometime?
Do I what?
Breathe.
Only when you're asking questions. That's when I really suck it in, and then I go.
Okay. My question, I hope it will not be too large. So I'm working for the most part with customers, large ones, in insurance and banking. And they're really struggling. I have one in mind especially who's struggling because he wants to adopt PaaS in public cloud.
Yep.
And yes, for the most part in private cloud. And he's struggling between control and the obvious reason
agility
why he would
and
choose PaaS and
yep.
cost and
yep.
manageability and so on. And so as I was wondering, how do you address something like, maybe we'll look back to containers, like immutable infrastructures and stuff like that, to avoid PaaS if you want to keep some control, but still have a new way to manage your YaaS deployments and so on. I've heard the private preview for Image Builder for some, for example, and there is I know ingest policies coming.
Yep. Yep.
How do you address like? In a big picture way,
yeah.
Concerns.
Yeah, no, it's a tough question. So I'll start maybe even higher than just the image perspective. It's actually a very common, and I talked about it a little bit yesterday actually in my keynote. It's a very common trade-off that customers are struggling with. I think when you look at sort of even the movement towards cloud, one of the biggest promises of cloud is agility and speed, right? You can do things faster. You can sort of unleash the developers to go kind of just get the work done. And in fact, I've seen with quite a few companies and customers that I work with, there's a little bit of a backlash. It's like, wait a second, right? Like that's, there's going to be a whole lot of compliance problems with that. There's going to be a whole lot of security problems with that. You know, they're opening up VMs with just public endpoints that then have access to our back-end corporate network, right? And so it's something that we, I think have really embraced as a necessary area of investment that the platform needs to provide. And I'm going to start at a little higher level, and then I'll get to the PaaS question. And this is where, when you look at a lot of the governance work that we do, and this is why Blueprints is particularly exciting for me, policy, which we talked a lot about in the last year as well, the goal that we really have is to enable that incredibly fast and agile development focus while still being able to put in the policies and the governance that are necessary at every service, right? And that's, that's important. It's not going to be just a PaaS, IaaS conversation. Even IaaS needs some lockdown, some freedom, right? Some of the data services need some lockdown, some freedom, right? And so how do you put in these rules such that you know, hey, by the way, my Key Vault, which has all of my corporate keys, should not have access to, should not be the same people that are building my developer solutions over here, right? Like this is maybe two or three people that can touch this, and so on. And so this is, I think a lot of investment and the policy work that we've done and then the Blueprints work is really geared towards that. Specifically around PaaS, I think the immutable infrastructure is funny because, it's good. I think of it less as a control conversation, although certainly I can see that benefit. For immutable infrastructure, just to give a little bit of background on this and the image sort of, it's really sort of thinking about starting from an image versus sort of building things up, and then instead of adding things, you sort of rebuild the starting image and sort of start from scratch. And the solution that I didn't announce yesterday that we are announcing this week is Image Builder, that allows you to create sort of VM images in an easier way. Containers in their sort of primary form are meant to be immutable, right? You're not really supposed to take a container and install things on it live, right? You can, there's nothing to stop you, but it's really geared, because it starts so fast, it's really geared to be like, just throw it away and restart with a new one when it's updated, right? It's sort of the idea. And then you update the image versus update the live running system. And it gives you this level of control, because you know when things are updated, you know when things are secure and trusted and so on. I'm a big believer in it, and this is why we are spending a lot of time on the VM side too. I do think the agility that's come with containers has come with this concept of, I'm starting with a baseline that I know. The areas of investment that I still think we as a sort of global world need to build, and Azure in maybe particular, is the ability on the container side to be able to actually track what's in each one and make sure they're updated, make sure they're secure, right? There's a lot of tools out there, but it's not yet really a good set of tools that give you a clear view to make sure that even if it is immutable, that it's the right immutable infrastructure. But when you look sort of at PaaS, I do think that you can get the level of control and compliance that you're looking for. In some ways, I would even argue that some of the PaaS services that you're building on give you more control, in that you're not able to go, you look at something like App Service on Azure as a good example, right? There's no VM for you to log into and go muck with a firewall, right? There's no way for you to go in and go say, great, now I'm on a corporate VM. What if I accidentally am logged into that and read an email from somewhere else and now it installs something? Like, none of that exists, right? It's all through sort of a separate set of tools that then can have their own sort of compliance and lockdown, right? If you're going through CI/CD, right, you can put sort of your control and compliance there. There's no sort of VM logging in. And from my experience at least, the ability for people to log into a VM in IaaS is one of the most open opportunities for sort of people to do bad things. And we certainly have a lot of agents and tools and partners and so on that can lock that down, but PaaS doesn't exist, right? With SQL DB, there's no logging in that could mess up your database, right? It is a set of tools that in some ways, and then you can lock those down with policy as well. So I actually believe that that PaaS gives you in some ways more control. Based on your response, you disagree, but that's it could go both ways. Is basically
for example, for networking,
yes,
you have the AAC,
yes,
but it has a lot of constraints.
Yes,
it's like bending the PaaS,
which we need to fix. Yes, absolutely, and that is an area of actually pretty high investment for us to make sure that App Service could be used as part of a VNet in a much more seamless way.
But what I think what I meant is also, if you don't want to adopt the AAC, maybe there is just to give a big picture, that you could use YAS, but in a different way without Active Directory joining, for example.
Yes.
With a much streamlined way to manage it, no connection. So that's what I meant by control.
And the use with Image Builder to go create that as immutable.
For example.
Yeah, that's good feedback.
Like operability speaking,
yep.
More like PaaS.
Yes. So basically you're saying treat VMs like PaaS. It's good. Yeah, absolutely. And that sort of container sort of walked that line, right? So that's very good feedback. Absolutely. Yeah.
We got another one online here that I want to ask. It's a question from James Vandenberg. Lift and shift to Azure or modernize your transition to the cloud right away? A or B?
That's a clear cut. Make a decision today. The actual, I would say this, and it's kind of a, I feel bad because it's a little bit of non-answer, but I actually think this is an important non-answer, which is that it really depends, not even just on your company, it depends on the app you're talking about, right? And this is a sort of an important consideration for just cloud migration in general. Obviously, there's a ton of benefit that you get from rebuilding, a ton of benefit, right? If you rebuild from scratch using serverless, take advantage of all of the managed data platforms, it's awesome, right? It's a huge amount of benefit, but your app may may not need that benefit, right? If your app is like, great, I change it once a year, it's pretty stable, it's intended to be an internal facing, you know, HR website, the content changes every so often, but like I don't really need it to be agile, I don't need it to be updated every single week, you know, not all apps need that, right? And so for some of those, that lift and shift may be good enough, right? And so it really is a trade-off based on, one, what your app is doing, how hard it's gonna be to go rebuild, and how valuable it is. And for me, again, it comes back to rebuild. The biggest benefit with rebuilding, in my mind, is the agility. It is the ability to change very, very quickly. So your most competitive apps, right? Your apps that are customer facing, they're taking experiences with customers, they're you're competing against the other guy, and you wanna make sure your experience is always up to date and actually always cutting edge. Those are the ones to really be like, oh, maybe rebuild is the right strategy. Let me just sort of bite the bullet and go do it. But then maybe you've got some corporate apps, some internal facing apps that you're like, look, I actually, again, don't need that app to change that often. Or in fact, I don't want that app to change that often. It's kind of just, it's just got to continue to run. We all have apps like that. Those lift and shift may actually be your best answer for the short term. So it's not even company. It's not even a decision that I can make. It is a decision that you all need to make. And it's an app by app decision. And I think if you're approaching it in another way, I think you will get frustrated because you're going to spend a lot of time doing things you don't need to, and then not focus on the things you should be doing, I think. So
that works. I've got another one online. Again, if you're in the room, feel free to jump on the mic if you wanted to. How do countries deal with slow internet connections when they're having to look at starting to use the cloud more or use Azure infrastructure? Have you come across that with customers, engagements you've had
in
the last
while?
We have
an awesome product called Azure Stack that allows you to take Azure to the edge. There's a couple things. I think as we continue to expand Azure, as we continue to grow out the regions, you know, obviously we talked about 54.
54, yeah.
Although I think I said 55 on stage. It's 54. I wasn't announcing anything. We're constantly looking at how, with that expansion of regions, we're also expanding that network coverage, right? And so the ability to sort of leverage our network as we continue to expand is actually one of the benefits of using Azure in the cloud in general. You get to sort of take advantage of that. There are still countries and entire regions of the world that are actually very hard for anyone. To get sort of great network connectivity. It's something that we do work on, and we do engage with those countries to try and improve those experiences. But then actually in some of those locations, Azure Stack has become a very common or very exciting opportunity where it is then much more local, right? It's a much closer proximity, much tighter network connectivity to the apps that are running. So that sort of trade-off between edge and public cloud, I do think becomes really, really, really great when it comes to network activities.
So, yeah. I'm going to put you on the spot and just say we're going to be continuing to do Azure TWC Tuesdays with Corey episodes coming up in the coming years.
Absolutely not.
So we'll obviously be taking.
Oh, that wasn't a question.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, awkward.
That was a statement.
Yeah.
It'd be great if you do have any suggestions for topics on shows, that sort of stuff. Reach out to us online, hashtag Azure TWC, to be able to connect up with us. I'm going to throw you out now to the next part in the live stream. We're actually going to be switching over to Windows Server 2019 Deep Dive right now. So thanks for running us online in the room. Thank you very much, you guys and gals.
Thank you guys so much. Appreciate the time and the good questions.
You got it.
Thank you.
Have a good day.